Nice and healthy. Yeah. All right. Thank you, everyone. Good morning. Hope everyone had a good holiday. Thank you for joining us for the fourth meeting for the demand management working group. And for folks who are, we have just letting the folks in the room know that we have one person just calling in and listening in. And before we go into the agenda and those various things, if we could just do a round robin of just stating your name so that way folks on the phone can hear. So we'll start with
Todd Hamer,
Hal Payne,
Brendan Flynn,
Bill Moore,
Michael Ward,
Ian Turnbull,
Justin Jensen.
Okay, thanks. And so just letting folks, here's the timeline again for the reservation, the subject line you kind of track there on the bottom. The only thing that's kind of different that is just saying like meeting four, we're kind of closing out the revising the polygon approach discussion. And then also we can give an update on trying to see what examples of demand management actions. That's the main plan for today. So as I had mentioned, because those are the main topics, so we'll do our standard process stuff. We'll have an opportunity to go over any updates since the last meeting. And then the two main discussion items are related to the revising polygon approach. Folks have had a chance to use the online data map viewer. And then towards the end, we can give an update on those demand management examples that we've, or resources to look at examples of demand management strategies. It's more of strategy, more so than there's a plan out there, is what we've been finding thus far. And then close out again with activity, future work group activities and next steps. Participation is still the same. Just again, like this is a little bit of a new procedure. So just encouraging folks as much as possible to aim towards the mics in the center of the table. And it would help for folks to state their name when they're speaking, which I just realized I had not even introduced myself. So folks on the line, this is Stephanie Horry with the Consensus Building Institute, and I'm facilitating today's meeting. So there's an example of trying to remember those things. So let's go right into the working group updates. So since last meeting was in October, so we rescheduled from November. So just as a recap from meeting three, that's when we had started the conversation about thinking how we might use different polygon approaches for estimating yield, some of the different methods you could use, like Bayesian, things like that. Justin introduced you all to the data viewer map tool to looking at that. We talked about more specific activities and the anticipated outputs from this group. And then I did not finish that sentence here, but some of the process requests that we had heard from folks was meetings design, tracking topics, and that's supposed to be tracking topics and expertise requests. So we have those things set up, and as you see here today, we have we're trying out a new meeting design. Meeting materials can be found on the TehamaCountyWire.org website for the actual demand management group's webpage, so folks can find materials on there. Justin, are there any other updates that you want to share with this group?
I think not. We have a CSAP meeting this week, which does have those requested agenda items on them. So you'll see that when we go get there. If you participate or show up, you'll get to see that. And it's always good, as I have always said in the past, if there's something really specific that you want to go a specific way, to show up and talk about that in a meeting. Obviously, I know Ian will be there, but anybody else who's interested and wants it to go a specific way, please show up and talk.
Go a specific way.
No specific way. I'm not gonna, there's no, nothing about anything the other way, just how you want the outcome to be. If you have a specific direction you want to be in, it's good if you speak to that yourself.
Just on the fourth bullet, we're talking about meeting design tracking topics. What are we thinking about for tracking topics?
Tracking topics, that one's a follow-up for the request for if the student wanted to have a place for if you had specific discussion agenda topics to suggest. And so trying to give you all this group a repository, just a, and so we set up a Google Doc for you to be able to, if this is your meeting folder here. And so now there's this new agenda topics info expertise. So you all have access to this to be able to jump in and start putting in your suggested discussion
Great.
Topics, expertise requests. And so and what will be really, really helpful for us is understanding what the purpose and desired outcome for those topics or including the expertise. And so like previously we heard about the county RCD. And that was mainly related to, do they have information related to, you know, the conservation and water efficiency efforts? There was a request for, you know, an ag panel. And so what would help is, like, what are the specific questions for that? So giving you all an opportunity to put in that information there, as well as tracking the past meetings and kind of upcoming meetings, the topics, and the actual outcomes and things like that. So we're keeping creating a space for all that one document for you.
Thank you.
All right. So this.
So is that link active, Stephanie?
Yes, it is now active. So as long as you all this
not the share link on your
this guy.
There you go.
Yeah. This guy takes you to the web page, and
so I looked at it last night, and then the materials were out there.
That because they were very, very drafty. So if you happen to check in the, 40 minutes before this meeting,
always good for
fair. technically, so draft slides are up there.
So they're up there now.
Yes. With the holidays, we're hoping to get things uploaded, you know, more than 40 minutes before the meeting.
Well, I noticed there's some stuff from past meetings that we're supposed to be up there.
Right. Yeah, like some of.
So one of the issues we're having a little bit of is working with the recordings out of that meeting site. So this should hopefully make that a lot easier to manage, and hopefully we get that problem and then resolved.
Okay.
So with that, we can start going straight into continuing our conversation from last meeting on revising polygons. So as a quick reminder for folks, you saw that this is really similar to a slide you saw at the last meeting of just the overall purpose is to for us to be able to calculate the sustainable yield for the polygon. And so you can decide appropriate projects or management actions for that polygon. And we had talked about and confirmed some of the criteria for what we would like to have, them being equidistant from RMS wells, get a decent coverage spread, having the least amount of weird quirks and things and outliers there, and then balancing the fact that, you know, it takes effort to keep these up to date. So want to acknowledge the realities of that. And so we had gone over four potential approaches, the true Bayesian version, using groundwater conditions as the basis, using land use as basis, and evapotranspiration data as or estimates as the basis. So that's the quick recap.
Just one more note to this. It also choosing a thesis methodology with more representative monitoring areas specific to demand management brings the northern basin subbasins more in line with what already exists in the Cornish subbasin, which has a greater number and a true thesis layout. And so it would look more uniform throughout the entirety of Denham County. If we ended up directly managing that way, it would lead to a more uniform program as well.
That one's a quick recap for that, and then.
Before you move on, Justin, what do you think of the other potential approaches?
You know, I think we talked a little bit about this before, but so one of the bits, so groundwater conditions based, I think you can cover that in the thesis methodology, where you are essentially taking into account the conditions in any one of those polygons to cover it. So if we wanted to go that way, we still can, right? Where we can add that information in as we start to make management decisions within those polygons, we can take into account. And I would assume you are going to take into account what the conditions are when you take into when you start to discuss management activities. Land use based has just a tiny bit of trouble, and it's mostly, I know I've talked to you guys a lot about this. Our data isn't where I would really like it to be to use it as a management activity. We do have a ton of data about it, and we can generally see it, but I'm just concerned about how many mistakes there are going to be and how many times we're going to have to go back and fix it. Does that make sense?
And yes and no. I mean, I guess you have to define from what land use data we're talking about. You know?
Yeah. So the presumptively, if you're using land use as a management activity, you want to know specifically what that land is used for, right? Like, say, for example, crop type on a given acre. And we are struggling with knowing that in a finite way.
Okay, I thought that was one area where we were on top.
No, it's actually really quite poor. And if you look at the data that's on the data viewer, you'll see all of the unknown lots in there. Even just for what we know is irrigated, you know, for example, what we don't even the parcels that we don't know are irrigated are not covered, of course. But even the ones we know are irrigated, what the crop type is has a whole bunch of blanks in it. That's the sort of red colors of how is this irrigated and how is this managed. So you have there's still some significant data gaps there. If we wanted to truly effectively manage it that way. And that's not to say we couldn't get that information. There's just a lift to make that happen in between. And it would be my proposal that that's something that we're tidying up over time. And if we want to build something in for future management activities associated with land use, then we build that into the future in the demand management program. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
So that when we get that data, we can enact those scenarios. And we'll get more clarity at the end of well registration at this next year, because that database will be incorporated and it has a land use, particularly, I mean, that is specific to irrigated acreage component. So, and that will help us sort of clarify that too.
Yeah, Brendan.
It's surprising to hear that we can't get that granularity there. With organizations like Land IQ, are you familiar?
I am very much so.
The database is a Land IQ.
It's a Land IQ database.
I was surprised too. I thought
they can get down to the age of a tree.
The answer
they're presenting to what somebody's paying for it, obviously. So that level of granularity and their ability to correctly. With a great deal of accuracy.
99.8%.
Right. Actually, right now, they've cut themselves down to around 95% accuracy, and also plus or minus 10 feet in any direction. So you have 96% within their area, plus or minus 10 feet on Land IQ right now. That's their current data that I saw last. And that's one of those issues where we start talking about managing per acre is, you know, if you have a lot layout like this that says how you're going to manage a piece and it's shifted this way by 10 feet and you're 10 feet into this guy's acreage, you can run yourself into some funky issues by using it as a direct management practice.
Yeah, except when it depends on what you're using it for.
Exactly.
Right? So if you're using it strictly to predict demand based off of crop type. So 10 feet is pretty darn close.
Yep. And my sneaking suspicion is that at some point you will want that kind of data when we start talking about
absolute
use. And we use that kind of data now within our models when we talk about pumping use. We use, you know, open ET. But OpenET is the evapotranspiration rate in software. And we use that now to predict use. So what we're not at a point, or at least I would suggest that we are not at a point as where you can point to anything specific on that map and say, this is how much water that's used based on ET in an exact way. And, you know, there's a lot to that. But so, and it's entirely up to you, obviously.
Well, so, yeah, I think what I was starting with is the statement that the land use-based approach is not usable because we don't have granularity of data.
As the only methodology.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I'm sounding like I'm saying you can't do any of that at all. That's not what I mean. So as the only methodology, I think it's going to need some other input besides that in order to get it close enough to be survivable.
So that's, I just say that's surprising because of what I understand about Land IQ and their ability to accurately identify crops.
And frankly, the cost. It's not that expensive.
No.
Yeah, I just want to say really to make that is that he's not using Land IQ.
It's OpenET.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, is it worth it to investigate the cost of Land IQ and
100%. We can even bring him in here and give you a presentation. That's all good stuff. Yeah.
What did you say you're using Land IQ for? I thought
it's OpenET.
So that's why the 95% talk, because you referred to the 95%.
No, that was Land IQ's last load.
Not the recent work that I've seen, but.
They dropped the last time that I saw a webinar bit from them, they hemmed a bit about their original thought that it was 99.something%. So, and they came back on that slightly. And then they also gave the plus or minus 10 foot. And that is because when you're using satellite imagery from a distance, there are dimensional instabilities, right?
You know,
just like when you have your hunting GPS, you know what I mean? Clear. It's the same bit. Yeah.
Sure.
You
know, basically, the way I interpreted this was, okay, how are we going to break it up?
That's right.
For management. So, really, if you look at land use, there's no, you know, you have too large of an area. There's no clear way that it breaks into reasonable size, if you want to call them polygons or anything else. It doesn't mean you can't use land use or evapotranspiration
within every polygon.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the true thesis approach is probably your best bet.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, just to kind of level set, make sure I understand my recollection. As we walk down the demand management, sort of how this might happen, and we would say if we get in a dry year, we will potentially get into curtailment. That's demand management, correct? And so what we're trying to achieve is to say that if you have a polygon approach, and I look at the maps right now and say this polygon is quite large and everybody inside that is going to be managed in this way based off of this data set.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to say, well, that, for example, the guy, somebody along the Sacramento River maybe shouldn't be managed in the same way somebody west of I-5. So that's the reason why we're trying to revise the polygons on the right track.
Yeah, and also, you know, conditions vary greatly, particularly with the Red Bluff Subbasin. If you look at that map,
correct,
and you see how groundwater conditions have been changed, correct, over dry and wet years,
yeah,
it kind of helps direct it that way too.
So what we're trying to get ultimately, what I would describe as greater granularity of data in order to approve if and when we need to curtail pumping, that we appropriately curtail the right people in the right places or the right wells in the right places.
Certainly part of it. Also, just to add the other bits is it may be that in the future this room says, hey, look, in this area, there is not anything you can do about pumping. And so pumping curtailment is not an option in this specific scenario. We have areas that have significant issues with groundwater level during long extended dry cycles that have very little pumping within them.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're going to have to talk about those strategies too separately, because that's a very different type of animal.
So I guess what I was leading towards is the greater granularity of data, the better one could manage the pumping in that area to have the greatest effect or the least detriment.
Well said, yes, sir.
Right? So if we can get down to satellite data that shows land use, to me, I mean, on a 10-foot level of accuracy,
yep.
which is in when you look at satellite data without getting out and doing actual on the ground surveying, that's pretty darn accurate.
Yeah,
it may not line up with parcel boundaries, but neither does the aerial data we have for parcel boundaries anyway, until you get out and find corners, right? So,
yep,
satellite's pretty darn close, and when you match it up, you can get even closer when you match up with ground truth.
And for
so, yeah, just again, if the large, what I've seen so far in the polygons are that level of granularity. If you said, if the county was to say, you're going to be treated the same way here as everybody over here based off of what's happening in this polygon, which covers, I don't know how many acres.
Too many.
Right? Yeah. Or square meters or whatever.
Yeah.
That measurement of what you want is too big of an area from what we've seen so far, thus revising the polygon. So,
well said. Yes, I appreciate that input. That was exactly how I was.
So that's and just trying to make sure I know where we're headed by revising.
Yeah.
Where and you know, the goal is to do what we're trying to do better.
Better.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And what I was saying, they're not exclusive.
They are not exclusive.
You can still look at land use using the Thiessen approach.
Correct.
You know,
I don't very easily confess. I have no idea how the Thiessens are generated. I just know what they are. So I need to educate myself more on that. But from what I've seen thus far in how those polygons are laid out, I don't like it, right? It seems to, it creates such a large area for a management zone that it's not, that it could be considered unfair or at a minimum unscientific.
Are you talking about the Thiessens as they are or the original layout?
Well, I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
Can you show them? Let's bring that up.
Okay.
And let's look at that really quick. Because I think that's an important difference. I would 100% agree with you on the first ones.
Okay.
It's it's impossible to manage based on those. But let's look at the smaller.
Maybe I'm not thinking of the most recessions.
This is what you want me to bring up, right?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, and put in, let's find one with the original.
Look at that Red Bluff sub-basin.
Yeah, go up to there. I'm sorry. Right next to the eye, the slit right there in the middle. So that one right there. Yep. Now we want to go down and to the Thiessens. So scroll down. It's down towards the bottom there.
That
should say. So it's past it. Right there. So if you click on that, so this is the smaller breakdown. So this is the where we are currently with Thiessen. And then we'll
what's the greatest way in land use too. So we can just see how they match up.
Yes, we can do that. Yep. But first let's compare it to the old one. Scroll up for me. Leave that on, and I think you can see the difference. In pumping, go back down, sorry. Groundwater pumping, I know, has an older. Yeah, do that one right there.
The 2020 one?
Yep. And that should show up color. Perfect. So now you can see each one of these colors is the original polygon layout. They're not really polygons. We'll just call them hexagons. Areas. Yeah, layout. And you can see they're quite massive.
So you have, we have some more division inside of those
and
colors.
That's right. So now every single one of those where you see an RV and they're broken down around a singular dot point, that breaks those down to these smaller and smaller areas. And as you can see, they get more concentrated in the more densely built out areas, right? And that allows
built
you
built out as it relates to pumping or in land use.
Yeah.
Or both.
Both. Right.
They go together.
They kind of go together. Yeah.
Okay. So and that so, they, so that blue can, one in my mind as it relates to me specifically, which I know is not what we're talking about, but that was where I would have said, yeah, if you're going to do something with what is now RB8, correct, the same as you were doing RB10, I would have said that would be inappropriate. But now you're saying you have RB10 and RB8 as two individual management areas.
Bingo.
Okay.
And that's the purpose of doing this is because I think we all sat in the meeting originally and said, hey, this is not manageable like this.
Right.
It's not, yeah, it's not fair to manage like this. Yeah.
So, yeah, now if you take those RB polygons and say you add in land use.
Exactly. Let's do that too. Let's see. Should you scroll down? We can look at this now. It's a good time.
So this gives us all wells that have about a 10-year.
The only one that is not true of is the added 7 out here, way out west. And it's because we couldn't find one that had a true 10-year that was monitored for longer than 10 years that didn't have these massive data gaps.
Yeah.
So RB7, I believe it is, ended up being a 6-year. Everyone else is 10 or more. Yeah. But that RB7 is really flat. So we didn't think it was too scary. You know what I mean? That's a super flat. And it's way out there. So that makes sense that it would be.
Not a lot of.
Yeah, there's no pumping.
Look at the land use.
Yeah. So, there's, I mean, no pumping out there.
Yeah.
So that's beyond any agricultural pumping at all. And very little even domestic wells. Once you get past that Rancho Payne area there.
So that I-15
that one you want
we're hovering over, is that land IQ data?
Let's see, I-15 open ET. Go ahead and put that one on, which is, yeah, I mean, same. In the sense of what it does.
Open ET, I'm not familiar.
It's another type of software that uses evapotranspiration as a methodology to determine water use and crop type. It's just a, and he can probably give this to you a little bit better because he deals with it on it every day, but it uses satellite data to interpret evapotranspiration and therefore give you crop type because they all use different ET. They all
so ET. Actually, by crop type, it has less granularity than maybe no way.
Correct. I would admit that Land IQ is probably better. And I think Eddie would say the same. That Land IQ is probably better in the sense that if you want it to be as absolutely accurate as possible.
More accurate or more timely?
I don't know about timeliness. I would have to find that out for you.
Just how
often you pay him to do it.
That's how often you pay him to do it. That's right. Yep.
So this is actually just using reflectivity to determine a crop.
It uses evapotranspiration the same way that Land IQ does, to my understanding. I just think Land IQ might have maybe more satellites. I'm not 100% specific on the two differences, but I know that it's generally considered that Land IQ is the best of the outcomes.
Yeah, I don't know what there is, but from what you're describing, it would say it's lumping things that are potentially having the same water use all in one bucket. So walnuts, prunes, and almonds, and maybe potassios might all use roughly the same amount of water, so they're going to be all the same color on this map.
Well, they do change. If you, this one doesn't have a drop down. Sorry, I can't give you that right now. Right, it doesn't have it. There's no. Go ahead and click on that. What does it say? Oh, it does. Go to the legend. It's the bottom left part is left.
There you go. So it does differentiate across at that level.
Yeah,
so you're right that it is deciduous fruits and nuts.
Yeah.
So that's what I was guessing.
Yep.
Whereas I think Land IQ will tell you what's a primitive versus almond versus a walnut.
I think you are correct about that.
Yeah,
and that's probably where you get that better granularity that we were talking about and they're better at.
So if one was to argue, if you're just using ET, there are very few almond growers that are irrigating ET. But whether you've heard that or not, I don't know.
I would tell you. More than me.
Yeah, sure. You don't generally irrigate ET or something. Some percentage less than ET.
Yeah.
Got it. 80%. 80% of what I would say.
Yeah. And so you always have to think of those math when you make decisions if you're going to do it this way. You'd have to sort of put those counts in.
Right.
On an average use basis.
Right. And the almonds are probably less than 80% ET. And prunes are probably less than 80% ET. And walnuts are probably 85% ET.
Yeah. And I've had that discussion a lot of times about using ET only as a management characteristic. That isn't even perfect, right? That 80% is different based on where you are, right?
Yeah.
How much natural groundwater you're using, how much moisture it retains.
Correct.
There's so many factors there.
Can be a reasonable place to start, but just making sure, you know, that most growers are not irrigating to ET.
Agreed. It's more like you're using kind of closer to like a standard baseline to compare crop types to.
Yeah.
And we have really good data about generally how much water it takes per crop type per acre per year, like that are averages.
Yeah.
We have great data for that. And you can use that to make decisions, but you're right in that it doesn't necessarily ring true for everybody.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mike.
One question I have is, so these are the original, these are now, are these, is it decent?
These
are the T-SIN polygons for Rebla. These are T-SIN polygons.
That what you're looking at right there, those labeled ones, now there's 50 of them in Rebla.
Okay.
That's the layout.
The only consideration, and I don't know if it will matter, I'm looking at RB3 as an example, and maybe RB5. And so we do have some land development on the eastern portion of those polygons. Would it make sense to adjust the polygons for RB11, RB15, maybe RB13 to take into account that development a little further west? And I just put it out there as a question. I don't have any opinion either way.
I mean, how are you going to, you know, the whole reason it's done this way is because of the monitoring wells in Notre Dame.
So if
you do that, how are you going to know what's going on?
I'm just putting this out as an example. So, and that was my concern too. RB3, though, I could move that polygon over and incorporate RB3, you know, into them. I appreciate you doing that. Thanks. That helps a lot.
There you go.
Stephanie just, for those on the call, Stephanie just focused more, you know, a better zone. So, you know, let's just say, what if we adjust, there's that point where all the polygons kind of come together. We're looking at RB3 and RB15 things. What if, and I'm not proposing anything. What if we move that out on just west of RB3? That central point. And maybe it's just becomes too big of an area. And then maybe move it up, you know, out west, incorporate RB3, move it up, incorporating the land development to the north as well. Then you've got one big poly, maybe two big polys that are just land use.
Can I make a suggestion about that? Just because I think this looks in a way, if you look at these smaller areas that are, you know, pretty much all on this eastern side of I-5, along the canal and the river, they're highly developed, right, with less open space within them.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of the transitional areas that are being developed in areas that can support.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you go west of that, there's very little development. And so in a way, it represents those dichotomies. It turns out, yeah, I don't know that that was the intention of doing this, but it turns out that when you break that down, it sort of becomes representative of these highly developed areas, the transitional areas, and the areas with very little or no development at all. So there is some positives in sort of managing them differentially.
So I would get back to my original question. Let's say you did that. So the area west of your lines, how are you gonna monitor the water? Well, there's no well there that's acceptable to use.
You know, but RB3 is still there. You know, I mean, you certainly can draw conclusions based on RB3 if you wanted or needed to. I'm not advocating anything. Well, RB3 is not going to go away. It's still there. And if it represents, what does it represent? Well, it's representing, you know, land development to the east, but it's also, you know, representing groundwater contours, groundwater changes, the groundwater to the west of that monitoring point. And I'm saying that, well, if I move that poly over, you know, now I have a concentrated land use, then RB3 is still reflecting, you know, what it's reflecting now. It doesn't change. Am I suggesting? So maybe your point is this. So I don't no longer, if I have a monitoring well for that new poly, and you're right, I don't. So with that green zone is, and those other trees are right below the RB3. Well, no, you're right. I don't have at that point. I'm not monitoring that groundwater table directly. You're right.
I mean, that's kind of my whole point.
Yeah,
why that point goes out like that, because of where the RB3 well is.
That's right. Map off distance from well. Everything is map off distance from well.
When it's generated. Yeah.
Equilateral distance from every monitoring.
Equal distance. And if you look at the wells, in the different polygons, about the same distance from the well.
Yeah.
And I'm just putting this out there for discussion. I mean, I'm good with what we have and you know, just trying to make it work.
Yeah. It'll be refined over time.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah,
Everything should be refined over time. I really hope that's where we're going. As you get more data, you incorporate into your management activities. Yeah,
that could identify where we need a new PFS whatever. You know,
absolutely. Yeah. Hey, this is developing out here. We need more monitoring in this area, et cetera, et cetera.
This polygon is too transitional to be represented by one. We really need something in between something. But that can be the ad later. At this point, we don't have anything there that we can use.
I said on the side here to Hal, ultimately the answer to better management is more monitoring wells.
More monitoring and any... Actually, all data.
All data, right?
But yeah,
so land use data is the out, and monitoring well is the.
That's right.
Well, the precipitation is the end, right?
The change.
It monitors the change of the in and the out. So.
Yeah. So is it accurate, from based off of this conversation from the group, that in general the Thesian Thesian method is generally okay, has created smaller polygons than what was original, so it's looking better there. That was one of the concerns that Brendan had raised. So now that the polygons are smaller, that helped address some of your concerns. Generally, it sounds like the PFS group is okay with this as a starting point. There's still concerns about where there's kind of like that transition between develop and not. But the group is thinking that as this might be flagging where you want to have more monitoring wells in the future. But the Thesian method is a decent starting point.
And is there interest? You know, I think there's always a positive to building in timeframes of what you do, at what point you do reanalyze things, right? And then it forces, say, my successor to remember that, hey, we need to look at this and update this data. as we move forward in the program, we can say, hey, every decade, or whatever it is you think is appropriate, there is a review of piece and polygons to see if they're still the most appropriate.
I think that'd be your 5-year plan. Would be
it could be any whatever that duration we all think is appropriate. I don't necessarily have the best idea for it, but your 5-year plan could function as that. Your updates every 5 years, and you can put it into your program, written in there as a timeline. Then it sort of forces that action.
Yeah, I think that the change in land use within the polygons will drive that
and require it.
And require.
Yeah.
It may require additional monitoring as well.
Yeah.
What's the current estimated cost on a monitoring well?
Oh, man. We just did one. I mean, they're getting up there. Right about $1 million. Yeah. Probably in the high end. I think the one we did in Rancho was in the 800s.
So it'll be similar to your 16-inch egg. To 16. So they'll drop in multi-completion.
Yeah.
So within that, then they'll put whatever size. I don't know exactly, but let's say the 4-inch column to a certain depth to be filled off. And a lot of the multi-completions, most of them have about three zones.
Sometimes
generalizing dangerously, right. But
three and sometimes four.
So it's a reverse rotary with the
right. And we've been using 2-inch drops, by the way, isolation drops lately, and that because you can get more later if you wanted to, it leaves some room.
Break that down further. What does that $1 million account for? That's the installation. Is it the monitoring for 5 years? Is it
include the house? That's actually the construction of the facility.
That's the whole new room.
So, that's just to tell us even to us.
Okay, so where's the money?
That's the other issue, right? That we all have to keep in mind. Is not only does the installation cost money, but the monitoring over time costs money.
Sure.
And you got to moderate that with that level of accuracy. So
that's where the land IQ is the way to go, in my mind, no doubt. But then you scratch your head.
Who's paying?
Yeah. We're going to have to pay for it along with the other laundry list of things about that long.
It's getting longer, just to be clear.
Yeah.
That's the unfortunate part of it.
The two types of cost questions is how much does it cost to use Land IQ data? And then how much does it cost to monitor over time with the multi-completion well? So kind of figuring out which one costs
more. The cost to monitor multi-completion?
There's the $1 million for construction, but the other one that we want to add in and incorporate is like cost of monitoring over time.
Annual cost of monitoring. Cost of establishment.
It's less than Land IQ. You would have to have a lot of monitoring wells before you caught up to the cost of Land IQ annually for monitoring.
Just the monitoring cost.
Yeah.
Right now, your funding estimate on the GSP came in at maybe $20,000.
It's in that realm. Yep, in that realm. With the number of wells we have
per year.
Okay.
Isn't DWR monitoring for free?
Well, only the ones they monitor, we monitor as well. So we have ones we monitor and report, and they have ones that they are funded to monitor, but they're not the same.
Not the same physical well.
Not always the same physical well. There's some tiny bits of overlap here and there, but we're trying to sort of work with them to get rid of that so you're not double paying things.
So what determines which ones they monitor?
So they get funding to monitor specific wells, and then they build us wells that we are required to monitor as part of the grant outputs. And then we also have gone and gotten our own monitoring wells over time that are independent of that grant planning process. So we monitor, I think 20 right now.
We being
Tehama County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. Yeah, we're at 20 right now that we specifically monitor. And then we also get data points from DWR from their monitoring programs.
Yeah,
there was a transition in there for the well at my place.
Yes.
Where you guys were monitoring it. And then DWR picked up, I don't remember what year.
That does happen. Yeah. In fact, it goes the other way too, because DWR will lose funding and say, hey, do you want to monitor this well here on out? And we might use it for something. So we have to say, yes, we need to want to monitor that well, and then we have to take it over. Because they lose their funding source to do it.
And all the data that you get, you upload to the data water library?
Yes. And twice a year, they get data from us, a dump.
And Stephanie, on the land IQ costs, I mean, I would imagine, I think they offer different kinds of services.
They do.
And if we could just have, I mean, I'm not saying this on you, but it'd be nice to know what that is at some point and how we might be able to use it.
If you give them a goal of what your outcome you're trying to get, they will come back very promptly with what it'll cost.
That's right. They know this everywhere. Yeah.
But you got to define what it is. If you're saying land use, you know, how granular is Brendan says? What exactly are you trying to get accomplished?
Do you need to know deciduous trees or do you need to know prunes or
plants? And every layer has a cost of it, And that's what I would say, you know, suggest to Hal's point is that you probably want to get a real good idea of what you want out of them before you really start talking to them.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure exactly what we need yet.
Yeah. That might take a minute, but once we get there, then we should have them in. And say, hey, explain to us what this looks like. Or here's our idea of what we want. Explain to us what this looks like.
So for the current data, how are they estimating groundwater pumping?
That is total groundwater pumping. It's done via the model. I can give you that calculation, any calculation that you want.
I can get it for you. You know, I looked at,
if you want to review those.
I looked at a couple that I am familiar with, by me.
Yeah.
And the groundwater pumping, if you look at 2021, 2022, 2023, 2021 and 22, water year 21 and 22 were critical. 23 was wet. And the variation is just counterintuitive.
It's the opposite of what you would think.
Well, 2021, taking Corning Subbasin, Polygon 23 is 9540 acre feet. 2022 drops. Again, this is another critical year. There is no surface water available now. 2599. I mean, how the hell there hasn't been that much change over that 1 year in what was planted.
Sure.
And then 2023, a wet year, they're saying that it's going back up to 6329. It doesn't make sense to me. Maybe I'm ignorant or what.
Do you guys feel like you want a little discussion on how that model works? It is a model. I mean, just to be clear, it's definitely a model.
Just follow the agendas. Can we finish that revised polygon?
Yeah.
Did we get it burned up through
that? I would really like to get to a point today to where we sign, hey, this is what we want to do, or hey, we really don't want to do this. Let's go in another direction so that we can keep this.
If when you ask that, are you suggesting are we good with the polygon?
Are you good with the Thiessen format with these monitoring wells for now? Obviously, we can change this as we move in the future. But as a management methodology moving forward, changing it for ground, this is for demand management use only, by the way. We are not reporting these as new monitoring wells to the state, right, in a program. This is for our use for demand management.
Bill, you'd had some concerns about the polygon approach. You haven't said anything. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, it's hard for me to judge these new polygons. I don't see the roads and where they are, but.
Kind of a smell test on some stuff you're familiar with?
Well, I think it's a lot better situation than we had the original. So.
On that note, can you pull up the topo to just give a reference of roads and stuff?
It's going to be in the base map to detail them above. That topo is not that great. Yeah. Imagery probably is the best.
Can you
do we want to turn off? Let's turn off the I-15 problem mapping. So that'll give it some color.
No, that didn't.
Let me scroll in over here. You can at least get a little bit more.
Here's a bud.
I see, yeah.
And the rivers that you can tell the river from that red line.
Yeah, there. You can see I-5 went to RB14. Try a different base map, maybe that.
I'm not sure that
you got to try streets.
Yeah. I don't know
if sure, but.
Oh, you've done the name on that.
You got
99. Yeah. Where's your number? You got 5 basically in the middle of the screen right now. Yeah. 99 just right at it.
Yep. And the river's the border.
That's going across. Yeah, the river's right there.
What is the polygon you're interested in, Bill? Because I think it was in the manual, you'll get better resolution.
Tehama's in R4, isn't it?
The town of Tehama should be either 4 or 12.
But 4 or 12, yeah. Or just,
can you zoom in on 4 right
I think there? It's going to be in. There's El Camino, there's Guile Road.
Yeah,
yeah, there's a canal.
There's our A64. Yeah, well, yeah.
You see the canal.
Yeah, there's a railroad.
So. Let's do a little bit more on 4.
And 4 covers a lot. You got
there's 4 covers. Gerber Road to Hame Avenue.
From El Camino away across the river.
Over to the river.
Which is a lot of difference. A lot of difference in usage in those ground levels. That
polygon. The elevation varies there from 20 feet to what? 120?
That'd be a good guess.
Maybe it could be 120. So.
El Camino, but it would be
99. Yes, 120. Can you click on the El Camino that we got? Can we pull up a private graph for that?
Yes,
for
that's our point. That's our place.
There you go. That's your line.
Yeah.
From 20 to.
So depth of water somewhere around maximum 85, 90.
Yeah. I think I asked this question at one point, but I think it's pretty relevant to how these polygons are treated is the wells that are driving those polygons, are they actual monitoring wells or are they just wells that are being used for monitoring?
The vast majority of our wells are wells that are used for monitoring.
Right.
We don't have that many multi-completion wells yet. And the one, a lot that we do have is a new problem.
Yeah. So I would characterize that as a potential problem.
Yeah. And something you're going to have to, you are definitely going to have to take those things into account when you start talking about.
Right. Because treating the data from an actual monitoring well, say it's multi-completion and it's 800 feet deep versus an ag well. That might be 60 or 80 years old.
Somewhat clogged, takes longer to recharge. There's lots of scenarios.
We don't know where it's perfed. We don't know where it's perfed. We don't know what the casing looks like. We don't know where the bowls are set. All of these other things.
So correct.
Right? So I think it's not something we're going to solve for. Ultimately, you would have a really great grid of specific monitoring wells.
Agreed.
Right?
Yep.
So. Yeah, I don't know what
to do. Be cautious in the meantime.
Right. I don't know what to do with that statement otherwise to say, because I know some, I have some wells that are monitored by DWR and they have been for 40 years.
Sure.
I can tell you some of them aren't great wells.
Yeah.
I mean, just because they're 80-year-old wells.
True.
One thing I don't understand about these monitoring wells is somebody can straighten me out. As I understand it, the data we're using. Is the upper strata 185 feet? Is that correct?
So that depends. There's two sets of layers of data. That the some of them have deep water monitoring, some of them don't. It depends on the depth.
Well, this well, upper one. This well has three zones.
And you're only seeing the upper.
But this is only upper zone.
That appears to be just the upper zone.
Would it change anything if you use two zones?
Some of them we do. Some of them we have deep and shallow on, and they are separated. I can't quote you on which ones are which right now, but yes, some of them have separated. When there's an obvious separation with a way to differentiate, there are some wells that we do
well, deep and shallow. This well is separated, I know. Okay. Oh, but my question, I guess, is we're using the 185-foot depth as the depth.
We denote that in every one of these hydrographs you see that says upper aquifer. So this is a selection for our upper aquifer monitoring, and then there can be selections for our lower monitor.
But an actual irrigation well pulls water from
potentially tons of zones. Yeah, it depends on how it's laid out. Yeah. It's all about how it's constructed. Yes.
So, for instance, there's a gravel strata that goes through part of our country that's from 185 to 220 feet.
Sure.
So if we're just going to use the 185-foot one, we're not using the data from the next one down, which probably most of the water's coming from.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that I will say about that in general is ultimately the purpose as stated of Sigma is to protect the shallow water groundwater water users from overuse. That's really the issue that we are talking about here. And so if you're monitoring only deep level aquifers, you're never going to capture what's happening where the vast majority of extraction for other uses is. Just to be frank about it, if you think about it this way, if this was only an issue with agricultural wells starting to lose access to groundwater, there would be much less focus than the shallower residential wells losing access to water. Does that make sense? Because you're talking about the differentiation between something that's used as a business methodology versus something that's used for everyday life.
Which generally drives the distinction between urban and ag.
100%.
Not urban, but rural domestic water users. Domestic versus commercial. And I think where you're going is saying that I've never heard it stated that Sigma is trying to do that.
I mean, it's straight. It says it in the legislation.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah.
makes a lot of sense that's what it's trying to, and you argue that we're trying to solve for the lowest common denominator. The different social thing about that. where we get stuck, I think, we generally, and we ag versus domestic users is our the responsibility or the connectedness or the interaction of the 640 to 80 foot domestic well and the 200 to 800 foot commercial ag well that's screened at 400 foot and below, and how is that pumping and where you're monitoring what's happening down there versus what's is the connectivity with what's happening at 60 feet.
Yep.
Right. So, and again, we're not going to solve for that, but
either.
That's but it is important to understand where you're monitoring and how that's connected to dry water years.
So
or not.
Yeah. And that's why this isn't.
Does it actually do anything?
Right.
Deeper. Yeah.
Do you want to walk through
this? And it's just really why you need to have groups like this setting policy for data is data. And we can talk about that all day.
And that's,
but ultimately, there'll be policy that needs to be made that is not the same as just straight data reflection.
But when you get into trouble is when you create policy from bad data.
Ultimately, you can, absolutely.
But what I'm saying is if you don't know the enough about the data you're getting from a well, because you can't even tell me where it's screened. You're just saying, I know where the standing water level is and where the pumping water level is, and I have a graph over years of where that has been.
Yeah.
Those are only two things you know. But you don't know where it's screened. You don't know how the well was constructed. You don't know lots of things about it necessarily.
All complete facts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the, but the jam is this, and I'll just put it out there like this. DWR doesn't necessarily care about that. What they see, they say you're managing a basin as a basin.
Yeah.
Right. And you're managing for groundwater drop, which is reflected in your RMS wells. Yeah. And they manage, they are our regulator.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, which we all need to hold in.
You just kind of have
a placeholder to say
yeah.
is that we're trying to
meet the requirements.
We, Sigma, yeah. is trying to protect the 40 to 80 foot domestic well.
I would tend to agree with that statement. In DeHaver County, that's particularly important.
The 40 to 80 foot domestic well is gone.
It's okay. In some places,
they the top account. 200 feet. Yeah, you're right.
But my domestic well but is the county not more than 60 feet, and it's not clear water right now because it rained 6 inches. So
it, I didn't know what said. Go ahead, Brandon.
No, I'm saying they're not all gone. Yeah, the 40 to 60s that are probably should be 120s to 180s, right? Then, and certainly in places in Corning, if you have a 60, it's not operating.
That's correct. But what got us going to this point with DWR are the reported dry wells, and they don't distinguish between a 18 foot hand dug well that went dry and a 700 foot well that went dry.
Correct.
And so they're looking at total numbers, and that's kind of where why we are in the situation we are right now.
Exactly. Is, yeah. Which is what I
the would high think. Number of
bad data well, driving yeah. policy.
Yep.
So maybe one of the first things to do is where it isn't a regular multi-completion monitoring well to do a field investigation.
Sure.
As far as trying to determine where the well is screened at.
There's a well completion.
By the way, we have some grant funding for this.
Great.
So this is something we're working on right now with LSE to start scoping some of these wells that we're using so that we can get the duration is what I would call the screening duration.
Yeah. But you can, that's all publicly available data. There's a well completion report.
For some.
Yeah.
We've had this conversation, man, it can be really terrible. It's so bad. We even some of our monitoring wells we don't have it. It's really unfortunate.
Before 1970, whatever it was.
And even the modern ones, they don't like, they did the well completion report, they sent it to the state, and the state sent it into a database, and 50% of the subs much you can. And you're like, well, I don't know.
So it's not that well completion reports weren't turned in, they're just not necessarily legible. It's not
both of those scenarios exist.
Yeah.
Bill, just checking in with you, Bill, like, how the discussion accurately captured some of the concerns that you have about the two different types of the, you have the shallow aquifer, you have a deeper aquifer, and if you had a multi-completion well where you're actually most of your usage is actually coming from the deeper aquifer, but the monitoring and some of the demand management decisions are going to be based off of what's going on in the shallow aquifer. Is that accurately capturing your concern?
If that's what we decided to do, I guess.
And so,
I think.
And so you have concerns that like that's how it's going to be done. Again, as Brendan was talking about, using which data you use to make those management decisions is becoming a concern.
Right. I think with those things, starting the conversation with saying where, what data are you using to maybe drive that purple line, I guess, if that purple line is a trend line. Is it?
And it's all written right there on the hydrograph. You can see the data that we're actually using that you see. So it says upper aquifer, well depth 255, perforation top and bottom 150 to 180. So that is where they were taking this data from.
So in that particular well, that's probably somewhat indicative of what's happening in that.
Yeah, the shallower level.
Kind of shallower.
20 to 25 feet.
Yeah.
That's this is a pretty good representation of what you're.
That's 10-year data trend is what you're working with there in most cases. It's a 10-year moving average.
10-year.
This one here is 20 years. What you're looking at right here is 20.
Do you want to look to the slide?
Well, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
So what I would really like to see, you know, because I understand that we're going to have a lot more discussions about data and its accuracy and how this is doing and how we determine what management actions we should take based on the quality of the data. I think that's going to happen throughout this entire process. But what I would like to do is, because I mean, ultimately, we're going to have to go down the road or whatever to get there. So what I would like to do is, if I could, get everybody's input on whether they're willing to go down the modifying with the RMS wells that were recommended and the Thiessen methodology for breaking it into polygons for the purpose of demand management. Does this make sense? Can I get kind of a, like an informal vote on this?
So you're talking about using RMS wells and the non-RMS.
The RMS wells and the non-RMS wells that were recommended, and we're using the Thiessen methodology to break it into polygons for the purpose of management activities and demand management.
Which gives us that picture right
here. Which gives you this picture right here. If you want to look at details for other basins, luckily this is pretty clear, but we can also scroll up and show you Bowman and Antelope.
The only comment I have on it is I don't have any objection to it. As you stated, I strongly suggest that it's subject to a five-year review process, a five-year update.
That's right, Dave.
On those, and that it's an extremely high priority, that it's a goal to improve the monitoring network.
Yes.
Because the outcome from this is going to be quite damaging to some people.
Dumb question, yes.
Unfairly.
Yeah, there's no question.
I don't know who, right? Yeah. It's somebody, because it's not very representative because of the crappy data.
Yeah.
I would agree with that and add that it's important to have as much the granularity. That's not the right word. Granularity of land use data within those polygons. I'm okay with polygons is the only thing we have to work with.
Understood.
And I'll add to that, I would say that if you suggested that we, non-RMS, if we can go out and quantify those, we know.
Yeah, if you can do it from well reports, yeah. Great. If you can't, field verify.
Field verify, yeah, with a camera. So that's the way to do it. That's what we do.
The money, pull the pump, video it.
Just pull the pump and video it. With the land.
Hopefully, there won't be too many. Depends on what the well report
looks like.
Information is.
Yeah, some of them might have e-logs. That'll be helpful when you start talking. Some of them will have screen dimensions, but it's hard to get.
If it's old and you're lacking the data, likely you don't have the e-log or anything else either.
Correct.
Otherwise, we'd have it. Would be a question of video.
That's the right. E-logs don't ever get submitted.
But well, I'm not
sure. All right.
Yeah,
so we do get some. Just so that way, Justin has it very, very clear, and this conversation is wrapped up. The recommendation going forward from this group is that it's okay to go with the RMS wells and the recommended non-RMS wells that we talked about. So, like, you know, most of those, you have the 10-year data. There's that one outlier that has only 6 years data, but it's a flat area, so it's not a big concern. But so those are the recommended non-RMS wells. Good to go with that one. And then the Thiessen method is okay as a starting point. Reanalyze for the five-year update and major goal, improving the monitoring network. There are particular areas like where the transitional areas are, where you want to improve the monitoring network and get more accurate land use data. I also made the suggestion of ground truth, where the actual screen depth is for certain non-multi-completion wells. Is that accurately capturing this group? Justin's going to take forward back to the commission.
I have one question.
Yeah.
The five-year time frame Hal is suggesting, is that just for the area of the polygons?
That would be for review of the entire monitoring and polygon process. So every 5 years, you look at it and say, okay, we have enough data to where we can make these smaller. Or we have enough data to where we can change these in a different dimension.
Well, I was just wondering, for instance, if we had three wet years or three dry years, we may want to look at it before 5 years.
Well, that
is a different animal, because then you're not talking about where you're monitoring. You're talking about its effect on
your triggers.
Yes, okay. That's your triggers.
Okay.
Yeah. But agree, that'll have to be in there too. No.
Yeah. I support everything that we're talking about. One of the things that Ian came up with, though, that I can't stop thinking about is his discrepancy that he noted on one of those polys as far as the level of groundwater pumping taking place. And I'm wondering, so you talked about the potential for having this model discussion, you know, on how these numbers are arrived at. I'm wondering if we can also maybe, again, I know you don't have the lane IQ data, but I would love to know what was lane IQ's estimate for that region compared to what our model is showing. And I'm wondering if we can have that kind of assessment
testing
any time this year, you know, not this year, but over the next 6 to 8 months. Can we really have that assessment done? So we really, so whether we have it, so we can have a comfort level with our model or not.
Well, here's my suggestion when we start talking about these things, because, I mean, you've heard me say this over and over and over again. We don't fund anything yet, right? And anything that we're doing, and it's a nightmare for me. I mean, if I would have thought about this from day one, nobody anticipated that we're going to get our plans rejected, and we're going to have to redo all this stuff, and we're going to have to spend all this money to try and figure out, you know what I mean? It's just a thing. You know, and so now we're in a very different world than we originally discussed having our fees put in place. And I wish it would be 2 years sooner, but that happened. And now we're going to start putting in fees into place in 2026. That's our goal, to have that, starting that discussion in the fall of this year and having something ready for the role for the next season. And so I suggest that we can do any of that work we want to, but then we're going to have to discuss about, is that a value to take out of the fees or additive to the fees quantity that we're going to have to put in place? So I agree that we should do that.
Well, I'm not sure I was forgetting today about the funding part. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. I'm assuming we have it.
There's decisions will be made off of that GIS data. And I want to make sure we're not just looking at pretty pictures.
I'm with you.
But that we're actually seeing something that is real or a close approximation of reality. Because I've been down this road with models and displays, and everybody goes, oh, isn't this cool? Yeah, it's cool. But is it giving you real info or BS?
Yeah.
And
is it based on fluff completely, or does it?
Well, and just, you know, so you go in and things that maybe you're familiar with, you know, I looked at three different polygons and they all had the same kind of trend, a little bit different, but generally, and I'm like, how does that end? And so that I just want to make sure, I think we should always be thinking in terms of is what we're looking at real?
Yeah.
Because the decisions that are made are going to be very real for a lot of people.
How real it is going to be a decision that is made in here often, right? How accurate it is. Because, there's no question we have inaccurate data all over the place, and we're using assumptions.
Using assumptions.
No question.
And like I've said numerous times in other venues, with ESIN, while it may be the most reasonable approach at this time, coupling it with a lot of the other data sets, it doesn't reflect what's going on under the ground at all.
No.
And so you got to keep that in mind. It's not, there is no relationship between those boundaries, between that polygon and the hydrological situation.
And water in layers and soil.
That's right.
Ground.
So caution is urged.
Okay. I feel like we have consensus on where we're going. I think I do.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. And I got your notes, and I think that we should schedule that talk about modeling because I think that's a good one. Because as we move forward, we're going to start making those determinations based on those models. So we'll want to see that.
I had a question about modeling, what we talked about. This is the appropriate time to bring it up.
Go ahead.
Calculating sustainable yield.
Yes.
I don't know if you can pull that for me.
We're going to talk about that. Is that our next topic? Segue to next topic.
So this was a slide that LSTE had previously presented. So it's this, that's why it's an LSTE to screen share, even though they're not here.
Yeah. So I want to point this out to you guys, because when we're talking about how model affects outcome in the data, right? So when you're looking at, so the first calculation that goes into estimation save yield, right, is this change in groundwater storage. So Q in, Q out, models, model-based numbers. Area, change in water level, those are database numbers, a model-based number. So every time that you do these calculations, you're going to have at least an assumption made when you create this data.
I want to comment on your FY. I don't see this as a model-based number. It's a estimate of it's not transmissivity. What is it? Estimate of storage, right?
It's more of a.
But it is, they use a model to extract that number. Not the model necessarily, but a model, a mathematical model to extract that number.
It's used in modeling, but it's not it's not based on a model.
When we say modeling, I don't necessarily mean there's two terms to that. There is the sub-basin groundwater model that's used for a lot of the data points in our plan and program. But model data doesn't necessarily mean, when I say it, doesn't necessarily mean the model. It means a model, an assumptive model. But agreed, it's not that one. And so,
it's a critical number.
But it's a critical number.
That's right.
Yes.
And are those calculated for each polygon or is this a nationwide polygon?
That's where we're going here. And that's what we're going to start talking about. Sort of as we move forward, right, is we're going to have to talk about what are we managing to, right? What is that? How much water can be taken from the ground and us say that that is a reasonable amount in the long term for sustainability, right? So when you start talking about safe yield, average pumping, average delta S, you are going to be using assumptions in this number model, in this number setup. And everybody is going to have to take into account that when we finally come up with what those numbers are. So, but the data is the data, the models are the models, and then the policy is up to the people who make the decisions. So that's that discrepancy. But this is the math that it would currently be proposed as the best methodology to estimate safe yield, right? And we have spreadsheets with some of the math already done. We did a couple samples of that and a couple of these polygons. I had Eddie do it and work on that so that you all could see what that looks like. And then now that we have decided that we want to manage through these polygons, we can do the calcs and populate the entire map with what that outcome is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But I ultimately want to get everybody's buy-in that you want to see the number based on this modeled mathematics and to understand that there is going to be assumptions placed into that mathematics. Or if there is any suggestions about information about safe yield that you would like to see in order to make these decisions, because it's going to be one of the big cruxes of determining how you manage for demand management.
I imagine that
people, can you tell me this manner of developing the data for safe yield is what has become acceptable to EWR at this point.
So I believe
we said we don't like how you're doing this.
Yeah. Oh, acceptable to EWR. Boy.
Right. You said, well, this is the way EWR says we have to do it.
I'm going to tell you this right now. I have already heard this commentary in a great number of places. You're not doing it like your neighbor, so you're going to have to move it to us.
DWR would
yes.
say that. Say
yes. Me. You're not doing it like your neighbor, so you're going to have to prove it to us. It isn't necessarily that you can't do it differently than your neighbor. It's that you better have backup as to why.
So is this a generally accepted way of developing estimated safe yield?
It is my understanding that this is a common methodology to develop safe yield.
But it's also a gross estimate. You know, it's not something that we can say, oh, this is it. You know,
the number.
It's a starting point, is how I look at it. And I would personally, I mean, in my, as we go through this, I may change how I look at things, but I'm not going to based on, you know, a demand manager program based on safe yield for a polygon. You know, I want to know, what is my rate of decline for this area? What other parameters can I, you know, and in that rate of decline, I want to know, am I affecting that rate of decline over time? So I feel we have a big transition period here to be looking at and following and not hitting ag in one fell swoop. This is what we have to do now. I think this is something we learn along the way. Knowing state yield is the starting point to get there, but it doesn't, we're not going to overnight make this kind of a change. And I don't,
I'm glad you said that, because I hope that's not what people want to
say.
I
don't even know if it's ballpark, but it's something to move forward on. I, you know, and I don't know of another way of calculating it, to be honest with you.
I don't either. Yes. I think if you're asking if we're okay with it, to be cheeky, I would say it doesn't matter.
I want everybody to understand why we're getting by. You know what I mean? Like what it really is.
Yeah.
And so if there's something that you want to know, like do you want to know how FY is calculated? Let's get a presentation on it if that's what we want to see, so that we can say, okay, that's as good as we're gonna get. Or hey, you know what? We don't like this one piece of data input that you're using right here. That seems way too risky for us. Do you know what I mean? At least there can be some commentary and we can talk about it.
I'm not sure. I mean, as long as I've been around water, that it's always been kept that way.
This is how it gets kept. Yeah. It's my understanding of the standard.
Yeah, and it's really, it's that, and I forgot what S stands for. I'm going to call it sortivity. I mean, that's a real gross estimate.
Yeah,
and,
real
sense. You know,
yes. It's a real gross
estimate. And no one's really had to apply that data for something like this. We're actually physically going to try to alter what we're extracting. No one's
but
used
people, the they are right now.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying.
That is historically,
that wasn't its intention.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
I think your point, looking at the rate of decline, it's important. I think that's what we need to look at. This helps as far as putting some numbers on extraction. But, you know, if you go back to the hydrograph that was up there, what was it? RB?
RB 3, maybe. I'm not sure.
You know, you've got.
It's right up there at the top.
Yeah, there you go. You can pull that in. So you got a 40-foot swing, which, like in my area, that's not unusual. This is not my area. And then we're looking at a straight line between two points, fairly arbitrary. That really doesn't reflect the rate of decline in that well.
No.
Okay? Because if I pick two different points, that well can be increasing. That well can be flat line. You know, I've got a problem with generally what we're calling rate of decline. The issue is there's you know, we put this hard stop at the minimum threshold, and you can see here, you're almost fetching it, you know, most of the time. And like down in my area, that's not that unusual. And if the green line is the measurable objective, you're about at the measurable objective if you average between all the different peaks and valleys. You're never going to be able to get this particular site in any kind of compliance. It's going to be hitting the minimum threshold fairly routinely. So somehow we have to take that into account as to whether is it in decline really or not. And it's an overtime thing. It's not, okay, this year we're, you know, you're going to hit the minimum threshold. Well, okay, 2 years from now, you may be fine.
I'm going to tell you right now, DWR already told us that big line, they don't want us to use that.
Okay.
Straight up in the meeting out loud. We don't want you to use this big line. We want you to use a 10-year pink. That's a 20-year pink line. We want a 10-year pink line.
Do we actually have to have a pink line?
No, no, but they're talking, when they're talking, you know what I mean. I'm using that as a, okay. Yeah, I'm not,
well, even
but they're saying we don't want
10 years is going to be
worse.
Yeah. It could be.
Yes, in many areas, worse. In some places, not.
I'd argue you need to use a different approach than the straight line.
You could, yeah, it's like a mean.
Numerically integrated,
yeah,
over a period of 10 years or whatever. And so that you're taking into account where you've had significant recharge, and you're also taking into account where you've had dry.
Yeah, that kind of mathematics.
Again, are they going to let you choose which equation to use to draw the line?
Well, it wouldn't end up being a line if you did.
Yeah, it could be a wavy line, but instead of a straight line. But
unfortunately, it would be difficult to compare two different monitoring. You could compare the same monitoring well over time. Are you in decline? Is it a positive number or a negative number?
Yes.
Whatever that number.
Yep.
But this, I've got a major problem. And I had a major problem when, you know, we defined the rate of decline as exceeding, what was it, a foot and a half. Because, again, the way you choose the beginning and end point
affects the outcome
dramatically.
Yes.
I mean, if you choose like 3 years, you're crashing.
So I just wanted to do a time check because it's top of the hour and just checking in with folks. So I do want to note that tracking that having as topics for possibly folks coming in for LSE, better understanding the model, figuring out for the groundwater pumping or estimating safe yield per polygon, as well as rationale for calculating reapplying. And then folks, again, this group can very much go into this document and add notes, add to it, edit. So this is, if I'm not getting it accurate, you can totally help with correcting that.
And then I will forewarn you when we start to have these discussions that in our discussions with DWR, they also said the words, you are in overdraft.
That may be.
Right? Those words were stated in our meetings. And so we just want to be very careful when we start to interpret data. We don't want to be too derisive in the sense that they start saying, well, now you're not being compliant. Because then you get the opposite end where they start trying to use their hammer instead of their
I think we need to base it on reality. Where we get problems is when we try and, well, DWR is going to want us to see this, and then we make some adjustments that are not necessarily doable or real. And generally, if you can back up what you're saying, then
you can get there.
Yeah, but you got to be able to back it up.
More and better data.
More and better data.
No, and at this point, we don't have
it. Right.
You're trying to second guess how somebody's thinking or how an organization is thinking, and you're making adjustments just because of that, that's a problem. And we kind of got into that right before we submitted the revised plan where, well, maybe they'll like this. And so let's up it 5 feet, whatever. Well, you can see in a lot of these wells, there's a lot of swing And that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. And DWR, I think, would tell you that a lot of swing is because of pumping.
It is because of pumping.
That's right.
But it doesn't mean it's not recoverable.
But they're not. This is a little bit of a misnomer, or at least from my opinion of what they're saying. They don't care if it's recoverable. They don't want you that low to affect people. And so if you're creating a larger swing, those people are getting dewatered during that swing. And so their ultimate goal is to be protective of that. And the bigger the swing, the more of an issue that can become. And so that's, I ultimately.
You keep saying the quiet parts out loud.
I know.
There is a presumption that you are in overdraft.
There is a presumption that we're in overdraft.
There is a presumption that ag is the problem.
There is a presumption that ag is the problem.
A plus B equals demand management, which equals curtailment. So that's just where we are, and we don't have the data that we can properly refute it. We can say, based off of our experience over 40, 50, 80 years of being groundwater pumpers in Tehama County, that we've seen low water levels and we've seen them recover.
Yes.
Right. But as you've said, that doesn't matter.
That appears not to matter to me.
The end game is there is too much water being pumped. And so we're in a situation in here trying to develop policy around what to do about that.
And I think that's part of some of the future conversations. But like, for instance, if you have a polygon where, and then you're looking at the hydrograph where there's big swings, this group then starts talking through, what's do we think is causing it? What do we think, what kind of management actions or projects would actually impact it? And so that goes back to what Justin was saying at the beginning, like, where there might be situations where cutting back on pumping is actually not going to make a difference. And so this group is supposed to kind of discuss through that a better understanding and recommending what triggers and what types of demand management actions do we think is going to actually be effective. So that, I think, like, all of these questions are what's upcoming. Is that accurate?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I just to make myself clear, I'm not pro demand management and I'm not pro not. Okay. I am pro us being within the means of having a plan that we manage and the state not managing it for us. That's what I'm, even though
that's exactly correct. Yes, that is correct. What we would like to maintain is some
vestige.
Local control to the greatest extent possible.
Well said.
So wrapping up,
because and the last part of that's the important part, because they don't really like local control.
That's right.
So as long as we can put together reasonable plans that allow us to maintain local control, that's what we're up to. Right. And so if we need to do something about the amount of groundwater pumping, then but putting together the plan of what we can tell them we're doing is the end game. Right? It's like, well, we're doing these things, and you said these things are acceptable, so we're going to keep doing these things. And stay away.
Stay away. Yeah, let us do it.
Let us do our things. So what are the things?
That's what we're here for. Right?
Yeah. Again, doing a quick time check. Does folks need like a quick bio break?
Just we only have, 20 minutes left?
Right, and the main agenda item was on like our giving an update on our research on demand management examples, which, frankly, especially with the holidays, was we could only dive in so deep. So we can make that conversation very, very short if the folks still want to just wrap this up.
We just keep going.
Yeah, let's move into the next. I just want you to see that first, right?
We're trying to keep these to 2 hours. Right?
Right now, that's our goal. And we'll talk about, I actually am going to, I would suggest this. If you want more time to discuss, I suggest we schedule more meetings. Because what happens when you schedule for 3 hours, everyone just goes.
2 hours,
you two hours is good, and more frequent is
fine. Even though, and we'll get to this some other time down the road, but you know, one of the discussion here about the hydrograph, especially Bill's hydrograph, this degree of pumping, the extent of pumping, the faculty is hitting MTs, you know, maybe every other year or something, or that's what the future looks like. We have to have, I mean, I know eventually we're going to couple with an investigation approach. You know, so we're going to lift up these polygons. We'll have a certain approach to that. And knowing, you know, the hydrograph will be key, you know, and knowing that we have this kind of a swing in an area and try to take that into account. I think it's, you know.
That's the question I have about that hydrograph. I don't know how many wells I'd have to shut down for that thing to be up where it was 20 years ago. And I don't know whether...
All of them.
Yeah, probably would.
Certainly 50 years ago, it was all of them. Huh? Right? And there is a time when it's all of them. 100%, yeah.
Well, we've been using them for at least 70 years. And if you went back to what that hydrograph looked 70 years ago, it wouldn't be much different.
And that water's really difficult. Many of those wells, unless they're within X number of feet of the river, many of those wells are difficult to improve, to get back to where they were.
Well, that's what I...
That's what you're saying, right? So it's like, you can't.
I got a well that's 1,000 feet from that monitoring well, and I measured it last spring, and if the water level is higher than when we drilled it.
Yeah.
But it hasn't changed that monitoring well.
So anyhow, Stephanie, I didn't mean to, you know, get us off track.
It's more of just like, if you all need a break, then I want to make sure you got at least a short break. But if you're wanting to just power on through the last 20 minutes, then let's pull some ahead. So.
Let's do a quick look at what's happening in demand management activities in other plans and in other places. And also, by the way, we posted you some data. There's a link to some good data, some data viewer where you can click on, and it kind of gives you an idea of what's happening with plans and other basins. Did you see that? Yeah. That's one you posted. You posted that this morning. That's new, because we're just sort of really pushing into this now.
You had a question, too, about this potential tools in the U.S. Is that equation okay to use? Is that the question you were asking?
Yeah, ultimately, you know, I want to bring forward to you so you see what it looks like in those selected pieces.
It's the best estimating tool we have available.
It's the best estimating tool we have available.
So, yeah,
but I don't want anyone to be, like, not know where it's coming from. And understand where those gases are. Yeah.
So one question, I mean, like, one of the recommendations from this conversation is that the staff and consultant recommended approach for calculating safe yield, this group is good with it as a starting point to the conversation, not saying that we're going to manage based off of the safe yield, exactly that. It's meant to give the green light to LSE to start calculating the safe yield for some example polygons, so that way you can start having this a conversation at the next meeting.
Because I'm about to go spend just a little bit, and it is a small amount, but a little bit of money on getting you this data, and I want to make sure that that's where we want to go.
I would recommend safe, but you
sustainable is how I always describe it, because that's the point that we're at.
They call it the safe yield, though. That's kind of the check.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think the caveat you said is that you don't, that is not necessarily the number that we're going to manage to or to make policy decisions about. It's
information.
So one question, you said that LSE already has done some test numbers. I'm just curious, like, is it for some of the basins that we've already talked about, or are there some basins that... Or sorry, polygons that.
I think we've got about 10% in Red Bluff. I think there was five or six. Now that I think about it, that he had done in Red Bluff already, and I don't see any reason why we wouldn't have all for the next meeting, because it's just math. It's just quick putting it in and bringing up the map and loading it into the viewer.
So I'm going to do my best to get you what that looks like for every single polygon for our next meeting.
The safe field.
What that safe field looks like. So that you guys can then start to get an idea of, you know, what that means on a polygon basis. Now,
safe field is a acre feet per acre. What are the
units? Yeah, it's gonna be in acre feet per acre per year.
Then coupled with that, we got to have an idea of what the land IQ data is on.
They're using the land use. Yeah,
the open OT. The volumetric. Yep.
They're using that for the out.
And then also, I'll just be square with you guys. At some point, you're going to start having to have a conversation about whether or not you're going to start putting the calculation of expansion into there, because that will be a requirement. Because there's two ways in demand management you can go. You can allow expansion to continue, and then it's truly every acre that goes in there for math, or you can curb expansion, and then it's per irrigated acre.
Let's see what the dimension on first.
Of course, yes. Nice. I'm not telling you have to make a decision today. I'm just more warning you about what's going to have to be discussed. Yeah.
I just want to. I talk to a lot of different people. One of the things that's come up is that future demands are probably underestimated, and because when we came up with our future demand management. I'm not sure what the term is I'm looking for, future groundwater demands, we didn't take age of orchards into account. And there were a lot of the orchards on the west side. And they were not in full production. And so there's some concern that we're underestimating what our future demand looks like.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it.
I agree that there's some potential concern in that. All right. Let's talk demand management activities.
So this follows up on the previous meeting. There was a quest of what are other sub-basins or what are other GSPs doing related to demand management. And so what we had done was we combined whatever we could get from DWR. So I mean, like the status of the GSPs, which ones were the high priority basins, which were critically overdrafted, the status of their GSP review, et cetera. So we combined that with this group from UCANR who had created the database, the Sigma Data Management Actions. I'm like, what is the A stand for? Demand Management Actions Database. So they, and then in your meeting materials, there was an article that has this figure where they had reviewed the GSPs. Again, this is, keep in mind, this is dated 2023. So it does not, and it was of the GSPs, the submitted GSPs. So it does not include, for instance, if a basin has done something, you know, since then. So it could be like where basin and several basins are starting to look into more of the allocations or pumping restrictions, things like that. So it's not going to be super super up to date, but want to let you know that this is
question for you before you move on. So you've got like you're seeing that there's a bunch of GSAs, they have these certain type of demand management programs, those are in blue. Incomplete, inadequate. So how many total GSAs does this represent? Because some might have taxes and allocation.
Yeah, we'll see that in some of the data below in the spreadsheet. You can get an idea of how many that is. But one thing I do want to point out is you see this thing that says maybe?
Yeah.
That's because it's written in their plan as a potential action, as a PMA, right? For potential future. And some of them do not have that in there, and some of them have it implemented. So blue is we're doing this, yellow is we could do this, and red is we're not describing doing this at all. Because it's just an analysis of the GSPs.
Okay, that's all that was.
That's an analysis of the GSPs.
Okay.
By DW.
Okay.
And so this is we pulled this tool together as something helpful to help identify like where would you like us to kind of identify and prioritize where to dive in, because as you can see, it's a lot. And this is sorted just by the high and medium. So as you can see, that there's a lot that we could dive into, but what would be really, really helpful from this group is to hear where do you want us to explore, which basins or GSPs do you want us to explore further?
I want you to look at Merced. Merced has got valley programs. They've got an allocation program. Both of these are in place. And I think the documentation is maybe well-defined. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet.
That's the one I sent you. Is that the one you're talking about? That has that their allocation?
Maybe.
And their allocation, I know so much. Their allocation methodology also has a built-in methodology to limit expansion because they put safe yield and then a following yield, which is the yield that decreases every year. So they're saying, okay, here's our safe yield. Here's how much we're pumping over that. And we're going to decrease that every single year. If you're currently pumping, you get safe yield and the following yield. If you are not currently pumping and you want to put in a new orchard, you only get the same yield.
Right.
So that is an innate restriction on expansion because they're saying you don't get this extra water.
And so I don't know that. I'm not suggesting this applies to us, but it's really good to see what we're doing and understand it and the logic behind it.
So coincidentally, did a little bit, again, very much Google search qualified. So we did a little bit of research on just what we could find from Merced, from that website that I had just showed you. And so again, to remind, Merced is a high priority, critically overdrafted, whether their GSP was approved by DWR. And so looking at some of the management actions that they're using, it includes conservation, land repurposing, pumping limits, water markets, and surface water use incentives. And so goes into pulled out, and that's for the basin. One of the GSAs, I think there's three GSAs in the sub basin. And so one of them, this irrigation urban GSA, pulled out a little bit more of their specifics related to the allocation and the pumping limits. So you can see that they have this limit of 3.3 acre feet per acre, and they put a time bound on it for 3 years. They have this monitoring compliance, they have well registration and extraction tracking. There's the flexibility around there. So how they kind of package things. So there's some flexibility there. And then have the relating to like pumping restrictions, there's the overuse penalties. Again, this is all does not capture, I'm sure, the nuances. But
I talked to there's a guy named Chase. He present, and I forgot Chase's last name. He's with the Land and Water Use Group. He spoke at a Glenn Calusa meeting on demand management, and he described this program. Todd was on that call too. And one of the things is just the fallowing program alone, and I've talked to others about, would this apply, or is this something we could, a road we could go down? And I'm getting negative feedback on that one, but it's worth reading, worth understanding. But, they recover in the first year alone 15,000 acre feet. Their goal is 45,000 acre feet. So, and people, they had more people applying to the fallowing program than they had money for. And this is a self-supporting program. So, it's just definitely worth
it. So someone's paying. The group, someone is paying for people to fallow their land.
What it is everyone's paying into this pot, on a per acre, irrigated acre basis, and that those are the resources that are being used to compensate people for fallowing. But I don't know what their crop makeup is like. This is a very different animal up here where we're mostly orchards, permanent crop. So I don't know that this applies to us at all.
It's not knowing, but my guess is it's going to be similar.
Not knowing what?
That area is going to be similar in cropping patterns.
And it's all, so this is for a groundwater dependent, that's wrong phrase. This is white areas of Merced. In other words, they don't have a source
of surface water. This is all groundwater.
So I think that relates to one of the land repurposing, some lots of examples where now this is the other GSA in Merced. It's called the Merced the Basin GSA, Salinas Valley and Tule. They're part of the state-funded multi-land repurposing program, encouraging retiring high water use crops to reduce demand. So again, like Google search did not have the details offhand, but if that's something that this group wants us to delve into further of better understanding land repurposing programs, following what compensation incentives, things like that, what do those programs look like? That's something that we could do, but want to get this group's direction. And I know I just threw up the slide that some folks aren't reading the slide, so silence is okay.
And then just as a little fun side note to this, these grant funded programs for things like fallowing and for things like on-farm recharge programs tend to be, don't let it fool you, they're relatively small dollar packages that you can use for a little bit. And you're basically like testing to see if they function. So I haven't seen one that I would consider big enough to solve an issue. And if anyone does, please let me know. I'll apply for it immediately.
I think all of these things are probably on the table. Difficult to talk about any of them in the face of what feels like bad data in many cases.
I think one of the part of the researching is to better understand, and one of the questions like what data, for instance, like with the Merced, what data did they use to drive their, like where did this number come from? How did they decide on it? What data went into that? Those kinds of.
That's a pretty reasonable number to account.
For locally here,
groundwater allocation of 3.3 acre feet.
I guess it all depends where you're at.
However, you're right in the sense that it's not an absolute killer for the vast majority.
When I say reasonable, it's
well,
given the fact that what most crops use, I mean, that's low for alfalfa, but
a lot of tree guys can get by on that.
A lot of tree guys
can get by on that. Yep.
On a given year, no.
Some years you'll have to, yeah.
Yeah, look at the details on that number, though. I don't know that it is 3.3 acre feet pump groundwater.
It's ET, isn't it?
We got to read the data.
Really?
Yeah. I thought that they only had a 13-inch out location, but there was also
an 11-inch.
Yeah, what is it?
Yeah, and
they do 13-inch allocation, 11-inch addition. That is what it is.
11-inch what?
That's that second tier of groundwater use that they're phasing out over 20 years. That the old existing pumpers get, but new guys do not. If that makes sense.
So you just got to read between the lines.
Okay,
know what you got.
It's not going to be 3.3 forever. It's 3.3 now. This is the one with the secondary. He was talking to Merced.
This is Madera. Wait a minute. Where'd it go?
Oh, that's not what I want to pull up at all. No.
Last one right there. Yeah.
Resolutions. You want. Madeira's, you're talking about the 3.3.
You just had a slide to show how was my allocation.
Bring that slide up, you just had up.
How was my allocation calculated?
Off the, this,
that guy. They had created a fact sheet of that. So that was, but this is Madera.
And they're using the Babel transpiration. And I'm pretty sure it's not OpenET. I think it's Land IQ.
Those are inches of water.
A fab of transpiration inches. Yeah.
What's the sustainable yield of the groundwater?
In proportion to what you're allowed to get.
So sustainable yield is water every acre can use. Transitional water is water only existing acreage can use. So if you pumped up until 2021, then you can use that. That's that tapered off water we were talking about where they're going to cut it down over time.
Indeed.
So that's less.
Transitional water.
Those are all less than 3.3.
Those are all less than 3.3.
And this is implemented now, correct?
This is, yeah, they passed this in 2021.
At least in Merced, definitely. I don't know about Madera, but Merced definitely.
It might be
in the works.
I hope to see how they dealt with sustainability.
Madera?
Yeah, how they counted.
Yeah, how they came up with that number.
Well, I think that's good. I think, isn't David Engineering someone?
David
So we're already in communication with them.
I'm setting up a meeting with them next week with David's Engineering, who came up with these programs, several of these programs, to start talking some of that stuff so I can bring you the data. And they're nice enough to give me a moment of their time. So
the next step for that event, because we're getting kind of close to time, we can do some research, seeing if there are other sub-basins, like better understand their fallow link program. Let's do a deep dive on Madera sub-basin, and we have David's Engineering to really, really understand all the nuances. And so that's kind of one of the next steps for exploring examples of demand management actions. Just want to pull together kind of a high-level timeline. And so for this group's conversation, I know we are at time, but I wanted to just pull this up very quickly, Justin, if you wanted to speak to these milestones.
Yeah, so, because I know there's been a lot of talk of, hey, are we going to be have enough time to get there? You know what I mean? And I want you guys to sort of see what that looks like. You know, if we're going to go through a process that says, are we going to get there? So here's a sort of high-level oversight of that. One thing to be very clear of, I just want to, sort of define stuff. Adaptive measures, that's the cuts stuff. That's the you can't do anything about it measures, right? Mandatory process stuff. And just voluntary measures are all of the other. And by the way, voluntary measures doesn't mean it's entirely voluntary. It could also mean that we might choose to subsidize, right? And say, hey, we will offer you this if you do this. So not necessarily mandatory. That's what that time frame looks like on paper. And built in time at the very end for some legal review, because that's going to have to happen. You know how that always works. And that's what we're going to have to come back and talk one more time probably during that time frame.
Are there any CEQA requirements here, Justin, do you think?
I'm sorry?
Any CEQA requirements here?
I don't think so. Generally speaking, this type of action is exempt. But
it's planning. You think this is just a planning doc?
Yeah, because currently it's a planning doc. Once you implement some things that could be construed as a project, then you may have to. But because of the fact that you're not actually doing one of those things, the triggers haven't necessarily occurred, you may not have to do that CEQA. But of course, I'll let the lawyers tell me for sure. Because sometimes they have a different opinion than me.
And I just
sometimes a judge does too.
That's right. Sometimes a judge does too.
I just want more clarification on what you're saying. So set triggers for adaptive measures. So you described adaptive measures. How did you describe it?
Mandatory.
These are mandatory. So you're talking like an allocation.
Could be that. Could be a restriction in total crop acreage. Could be, there's so all of those things that we talk about are, hey, here's something you have to do in order to reduce.
All right. Your resolution identified These were the voluntary measures, so best practices, conservation, inland surface water, land repurposing, again, that's where incentives can be used, land use change, incentives, dry farming, fallowing, those were all that's the voluntary, so and can be incentive-based. And then the phased adaptive measures, that's where allocations, well restrictions, pumping restrictions, water market trading, fee structures, all of those being on the table and up for discussion as per your resolution.
That document in?
Yes. Now that it's all linked, so you can now also, and this table is, again, trying to start capturing the benefits and concerns, uncertainties, other considerations. It's all very, very high level of, like, generally, here's what folks are saying about benefits and concerns for allocations, et cetera. So it's not really getting into the specifics of Port Tehama, which is what we want this group to be doing. But you all have access to this and can dive into it and edit and comment and things like that.
So. And there's also a link to the database from DWR that allows you to click on any sub-basin. And it will pop up and say, okay, here's what they are doing in their plan. Here's what they could do in their plan. And here's what they're definitely not doing in their plan. So you can kind of get a feel for what's out there.
That's in this document as well. The links.
That's
oh, not in this document.
It's not in this one. It's on. Can you show them where that is?
Just for like the Sigma GSPs that they that
yeah, the GSP.
This is the DWR, so remember.
Yeah.
So, put a bunch of credence in it. Yeah, and these are just planning docs, it's plan level stuff.
It is. Yeah. Only the blue is what you should be looking at if you're doing it, because that means they're actually doing it. Or it's got a date in which they're going to do it. So it's fixed. All of that other stuff, the yellow and the red, that means nothing. Those are, hey, we put it in there as a list of potential PMAs. That doesn't mean that they're going to do it. That says maybe, and the red says no.
Conveniently. If you are interested in the Merced sub-basin, there's a column to that GSP. So again, we created this tool to help you just explore and help you kind of identify which ones you want to further explore.
That document is also in our...
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's one with a map that you can click on each sub-basin, right?
Well,
if you don't have it, I'll make sure that it gets in the database. In your guys' accessible file. That just makes it easy to click on one and say, okay, here. It's the whole map, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That allows you to get to them. But we'll make sure you get that. It's just easy to see, so it's intuitive. You know,
to give you a different email address.
I think it might be
the Google Drive?
Yeah.
Okay, you can email me, and then I'll just respond right back.
And CC me on that one because I have I can mess with those permissions really, really quickly. So for this group, the March immersion from this last conversation is deeper dive fouling programs, Madeira sub-basin, that's where we can connect with David's engineering. Is there any other ask, Justin, for this group?
Yeah, I think as we move forward and we detail this together, because ultimately, these are decisions that are made over time, right? You can see up there that it's a little bit later in schedule. But we don't want to not talk about it because you don't want to make that decision in 1 month, right? So we got to start talking about this now, and we'll be discussing what those are. We can give you a little bit more of what's happening in each of the basins as we move. So I'll give you an update after I meet with David so that I can talk a little bit about them because they've done work on several of these. And also, I've been reading a lot of articles. Good new scholarly stuff about the effect of management activities on A, agricultural output, and B, local economies. So we can start talking about that more effectively as well. But that's TBD. I want to make sure that I have enough data together to actually give you something, not just an article.
So one of the things that we can do post this meeting is just email you all so that when with the directly to some of the tools that we've just talked about, so just easy access, you can let us know if there's a different email address, if you have access issues. The ask for before next meeting is to help us with this, like, we'll do this research, but do not depend on us to be the lead on that. Like, if you're already hearing about information, like you were talking about the Glenn Kaluska meeting, if you're hearing of examples, then let us know those. Well, looking to for your help with those things. So that way, the next meeting on December 18th, we can continue again. Like, we'll have more of the safe yield, sustainable yield for polygons. We'll have that to explore, and then we'll have more updates on more information, hopefully, on demand management examples.
You reminded me. So the Glenn Kaluska GSAs, they're going to meet online every 5 weeks to build a demand management program. And so, and David's Engineering is part of that. They're part of the lead in that, I believe. So this is something, so instead of having a working group like we have, these are two GSAs that are meeting to develop a demand management plan. And so it'll be good to follow their progress, and maybe we'll get some insights through that as well.
Yeah, the David's guys are sharp, by the way. I really like them. This is kind of becoming a little bit of their specialty stuff at the moment, something they're working on a lot. So hopefully a fruitful conversation. And then one more thing, just so you're not surprised by this, for CSAP meeting, when we start talking about working with the other GSA and starting to work together with their ad hocs, I am going to suggest that at first, because there are, we do business some different ways, and I'm going to suggest that you three have a meeting with them, with those three, the ad hoc to ad hoc, and then work out how you want to work together. Does that make sense? Because I don't think their methodology would allow our methodology to work together on the first meeting. You guys are going to have to figure it out, and there's going to have to be some invitations for others because they have closed session meetings, et cetera, et cetera. So just so you, when you hear that, don't be panicked. I still want you to get what you want out of it, but I want you to, you know what I mean by that. Don't think I'm not trying to do what you're asking me to do. I want you to get that, but I need, I think you're going to have to work it out as an ad hoc first.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure. I anticipate, you know, being involved like that. Let me throw this idea out there, and if this isn't working for you, Justin, you know, let me know. If we can bring in their ad hoc everyone in the room, what I'm trying to do, what I'd like to see happen, is that we work on the Corning demand management plan, because that's where the funding is. And so by working on the Corning demand management plan, and I'm looking to get a physical document out of this for various reasons, we have that potential source of funding. It's a grant. There's about $225,000 set aside. To my knowledge, it hasn't been utilized at all at this point. It's for the Corning subbasin only. Okay. So my goal or thought is that we develop, you know, basically the core document for the Corning subbasin demand management program, which is also most likely the core document for everything else we're going to be doing in the county. That's the idea behind it. So I'm hoping we acquire a funding source to do some of the things that we're talking about today. And that could be, you know, the land IQ data. It could be, you know, doing the analysis of safe yield versus land IQ, versus pumping levels versus land IQ estimates. That's what I'm hoping to see happen. And then I'm suggesting that we, you know, work with the Glenn County demand management group as well, ad hoc as well. I don't know how you guys feel about that. I mean, there's more to it than that, but that's the gist of it. And I would be more than happy to meet in Corning and, you know, physically incorporate those three individuals into our group to pull this off. That's how I'm looking at it. Just point out some very important details there. Any thoughts on pulling something like that off?
Important details like what?
like a
rules meet. Associated with ad hoc meeting in different agencies.
Yeah, they need to.
They're not exactly the same. And we've set some rules that are different, like that they must be broadcast and all these different things that we have to deal with. And you all are going to have to interact and determine how you want to deal with that. And because I can't just say, Glenn County, meet with them because this is going to happen. They're going to say, no, we do what we do. You're going to have
well, you guys, they may not.
They may not. I don't know, but you know what I mean. You guys are going to have to get together and work out how you want to meet and deal with that.
Is the arc that the Tehama County plan is going to be different likely than the Glenn County or
the... It won't be. It shouldn't be different than for the Corning Subbasin. However, there's that piece of the Corning Subbasin that's going down. I expect it to be similar, but not the exact. And I don't know what that means. Don't know what it looks like. It's their policies. It's their way of funding. You know, I'm not sure what they've already established that way.
I'm sure they're down the road there.
Actually, I don't think they're anywhere.
Not. They're not.
You know, except that, help me here, Dustin. I mean, don't they have funding in place already?
They have
part of the Corning Subbasin.
They have their own funding. I know very little about how they're funded, what their company is for, to be clear. But they do have a fixed fund fee in place that covers work off from their side.
So they're ahead of us in that
sense. What's the funding utilized for consultants to do the work?
You probably, for the most part. But like I said, I'm not, I don't,
I
you know.
I just want time check and also be flexible. So I want to close out this meeting and I would suggest that the next step, a flag that this is a conversation that needs to happen. And I would ask as the next step is that if you have specific questions for the ad hoc, so these three, then email, capture it. So that way they have understand the questions that they should be considering as they're trying to think through how do the joint ad hocs want to work together. So
to answer your question, on the surface, I don't have an issue with it. I just want to, with the caveat that our plan is our plan, right? Ultimately. So we're not just kind of walking down together.
I appreciate, the level of organization that we have at this point, and that, the way we've structured the data, whether you like the data or not, it's as good as it gets, I think, at this point. Yeah. And so I like where we're at in this effort. I just want to see a physical document come out of it that documents what we've done.
I just want
to shut down the meeting. Now.
Close the meeting just to let folks on the phone that you can sign off your closing today. And thank you so much for joining us. Again, the next demand management meeting we're expecting is on December 18th.
Thank you.